This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The movie L.A. Confidential has turned out to be one of the most acclaimed films of 1997. It's won Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Screenplay awards from the New York Film Critics Circle and the L.A. Film Critics. And it's nominated for 5 Golden Globe Awards. On this archive edition, we have an interview about the making of the film with director Curtis Hanson, and a little later we'll hear from star Russell Crowe. First, let's hear a scene from the film. Kevin Spacey plays Jack Vincennes, a cop who consults to Badge of Honor, a TV show like Dragnet. He's dancing at a party for the show. Later in the scene, you'll hear Danny DeVito as Sid Hudgens, a scandal sheet reporter in cahoots with Vincennes.
I'm the technical advisor. I teach Brett Chase how to walk and talk like a cop.
Brett Chase doesn't walk and talk like you.
Well, that's because he's the television version. America isn't ready for the real me.
Is it true you're the one who arrested Bob Mitchum?
Uh-huh.
These Badge of Honor guys like to pretend, but being the real thing must be a thrill.
Why don't you and I go someplace quiet? Because I'd love to give you the lowdown on Mitchum.
Big V! Jack Vincennes!
Hey!
May I have this dance?
Of course. Karen, this is Sid Hutchins from Hush Hush Magazine.
Hello, Karen.
Hello yourself.
Mm-hmm. What's that about?
We did a piece last year on Janu Dykes in Hollywood. Her name got mentioned. Hey, Jackie boy, a friend of mine just sold some reefer to Matt Reynolds. He's tripping the life fantastic with Tammy Jordan.
Sorry, I lost you for a second, Sid.
Contract players, Metro. You pinch him, I do you up nice feature next issue. Plus usual 50 cash.
No, I need another 50. 2 20s for 2 patrolmen and a dime for the watch commander at Hollywood Station.
Jackie, it's Christmas.
No, it's not. It's felony possession of marijuana.
Actually, in circulation 36,000 and climbing, there's no telling where this is gonna go. Radio, television. Once you whet the public's appetite for the truth, the sky's the limit.
Before directing L.A. Confidential, Curtis Hanson was best known for directing 2 big hits, the thriller The River Wild with Meryl Streep and Kevin Bacon, and the suspense film The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Hanson also co-wrote and co-produced L.A. Confidential with Brian Helgeland. I asked Hanson why he wanted to make L.A. Confidential and how he first came across the story.
Well, it all started with the book. I read James Ellroy's novel for pleasure about 4 years ago, and I read it not looking for a movie, but just because I'd read half a dozen of his other books and thoroughly enjoyed them because I think Ellroy is a unique voice in contemporary fiction. What happened with L.A. Confidential, and what I was not prepared for, quite frankly, was the degree to which I got emotionally involved with the characters and involved in a rather complex and surprising way, because when I met each of the major characters, I didn't like them. But as I kept going, I got emotionally involved and ultimately really began to care about each and every one of them and their personal struggles. And the more I thought about it, I just thought if I could capture this experience for a movie-going audience, I would have a unique movie.
What are some of the things that you've seen in period films that you wanted to avoid?
I didn't want this to be a picture that was an homage to a style of another era. My number one directive to my collaborators was, let's create the world of L.A. Confidential, Los Angeles 1953. Let's pay great attention to the detail, but then let's shoot it as though we don't care about the detail. Let's shoot it as though it's a contemporary movie so that the characters are in the foreground and their emotions are in the foreground. So my film references were more what I wanted to avoid rather than what I wanted to do. And of course, Dante, being a cameraman, was just all over that. He got what I was saying immediately, and he took it one step further, which was he found the key to the lighting in that example, which was that L.A. Confidential would be lit in a naturalistic way, which is where the audience is aware of the source light, where the light is coming from in each scene, which is sort of diametrically opposed to the way classic film noir is lit with the you know, highly stylized black and white with the vivid dark shadows that bisect the screen and so forth.
It's a really interesting period in Los Angeles history that the movie is set in. It's a period when, you know, there's a show like Dragnet that's imitating the cops, whereas, you know, the cops in L.A. Confidential want the heroism and celebrity of the TV stars, and the politicians are tied into some of the corrupt parts of Hollywood. The tabloids are covering it all. Everything, as depicted in the movie, is corrupt in this part of Los Angeles. You grew up in Los Angeles in the 50s, didn't you?
Yes, I grew up in Los Angeles, as in fact did both my parents. I mean, Terry, that's the fascinating thing about Los Angeles in the early 50s. So much of what was beginning in Los Angeles at that time, in that period of optimism and economic growth after World War II, is still with us today, for better or for worse. You know, television as this powerful image-making machine that was used in a very deliberate way by the LAPD to sort of sell the image of this new police force that had been reworked into a military model based on the Marine Corps in World War II. And the result was a police force that was empowered in a way that no force ever was before, because of that TV image, they felt they could do no wrong, and in fact, the public felt they could do no wrong. And the birth of modern tabloid journalism as we know it, Danny DeVito in the movie plays the editor of Hush Hush magazine, who is the equivalent of our, let us say, Confidential magazine. And as he says at the beginning of the movie, radio, television, once you whet the public's appetite for the truth, the sky's the limit. Well, that's where we're living today.
Right. It's funny how timely in its own way this 1953 era movie is, because you've got the beginning of the tabloids, you've got corruption in the LA police force and brutality in the LA police force. Did you expect to be making that kind of, with the LA police force, I'm sure by the time you decided to do this movie, there was already a lot of investigation into the police force. It was post-Rodney King, probably.
Yes, of course, the book was pre-Rodney King, mm-hmm. obviously. Brian and I started working on the script post-Rodney King, but pre-OJ. And in fact, you know, one of the cards that we got in one of our first research screenings that I found very gratifying was somebody had scribbled on the back of the card, "Are we supposed to think of Ed Exley, the character that Guy Pearce plays, as being a young Daryl Gates?" That's the kind of question that you want people asking, because they're taking what they see in the movie and projecting it to the life that we all live with.
Another really potent idea in the movie is that there's this ring of prostitutes who, with the help of plastic surgery, are made up to look like Hollywood movie stars. Kim Basinger plays the prostitute who's made up to look like Veronica Lake. And that whole idea that sex will be even more exciting if the person looks like a Hollywood movie star, so we'll just, like, make these prostitutes into those looks, is really a very interesting one. Tell me what spoke to you about that idea.
Well, first of all, for me, what the overall theme of the movie, and it's a theme that I've dealt with a little bit in other movies, but this is the first time I've been able to deal with it as fully, and also in Los Angeles, the city of manufactured illusion, is the difference between image and reality, the difference between how things appear and how they really are. And, of course, the Kim Basinger character sort of sums that up for the audience, because she looks like Veronica Lake, but in fact, you know, is something else quite different. You know, interestingly enough, that idea of prostitutes that look like movie stars is based on fact. One of the what I've always found interesting about Elroy's technique is that he takes things that are true, such as Mickey Cohen, Johnny Stompanato, the major sequence in the beginning of the movie that's called Bloody Christmas, where the policemen sort of riot and beat up some Mexican prisoners. That's all based on things that actually happened in Los Angeles at the time. And then, of course, we spin off into our tale.
My guest is Curtis Hanson, director of L.A. Confidential. He'll be back with one of the film's stars, Russell Crowe, after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Curtis Hanson, director of the new film L.A. Confidential. Also with us is Russell Crowe. He plays one of the three cops the story is built around. Bud White, a cop who doesn't think of himself as very bright, but knows how to work over suspects to get information. Crowe was born in New Zealand and raised in Australia, where he still lives. He made his American debut in the film The Quick and the Dead, starring opposite Sharon Stone. He played a neo-Nazi in the film Romper Stomper, a gay son in The Some of Us, and co-starred with Denzel Washington in Virtuosity. I asked Russell Crowe to describe the cop he plays.
Bud White is a very basic meat and potatoes, blue-collar kind of guy. You know, he sees things in a very clear-cut manner. He knows or believes he knows the difference between right and wrong. And even though when I first read the script, I saw him as an extremely immoral man using his badge and authority for his own ends. After a while, and having read the book, I began to see it from the other way around. I saw him as a very strong moral center who has a great belief in the things that are important to him, you know, and he will fight and die for those and what he believes in.
I think that this is the kind of part where a lot of who the character is just kind of projected by him and isn't necessarily registered through the dialogue, through the words on the page. And I think there's something you bring to the role, a kind of sensitivity beneath the brutality that is conveyed very well by your face, your expression, your body. And I was wondering if you could describe a little bit what you thought about there in terms of the just physical presence of the character and what that needed to be.
Well, we had very long discussions, me and Curtis, about who he was. And at first I was a little scared and freaked out because in the book it's Bud White is described as the largest man in the Los Angeles Police Department.
Which you are not at all, that large.
No, that's why I rang Curtis and said, I don't know what you've seen, it must be smoke and mirrors, because I ain't that big. But, you know, we did a certain amount of physical work in terms of, large weights and stuff, you know. But I didn't want the guy to be cut or anything, because it's 1953, and just the way he lived his life and what he eats and all that sort of stuff, he just wouldn't be that kind of physical presence, you know. But there's a sort of thing that happens when you're playing this kind of role. If it's on the page, it's very easy to fulfill it, you know. Sometimes you're asked to take a huge leap from what's on the page and what's actually, you know, expected. But this is a really good script, and that's where it starts from when you're an actor.
Curtis Hanson, you said something very interesting, and I think it was a New York Times article about how people looked different in the 50s. Bodies weren't aerobicized the way they are today, and actors didn't have those like rippling, sculpted muscles the way they do today. So I'd like to hear from each of you how that affected the movie. Curtis Hanson in your casting, Russell Crowe in the way you carried yourself.
Well, Terry, that was part of the, you know, challenge of casting this picture in which there are 80 speaking parts was mm-hmm. to try and get the look of that period. I had the, you know, great good fortune of working with Mally Finn, who's just an extremely dedicated and tenacious casting director. And the goal was to find men that looked like that World War II veteran 5-8 years later, who is not gone soft exactly, but in that time when men drank hard, smoked hard, and ate lots of meat and never thought about going to the gym or working out.
Oh, you mean I was typecast?
Russell Crowe, do you have those rippling muscles?
I think it's just dependent on the character. If it's important to the character, you know, To get to that level, then fine and dandy, you know. But it's based on the character, whether you're playing an anally retentive Welsh Baptist virgin or whether you're playing a meat and potatoes tank of a man like Bud White. You've got to fulfill who it is that you're playing, you know. And if it's a requirement that this guy is part of his life or whatever, you know, dictates that he's going to be very physically fit, then you go that way, you know. I think as a young actor, once you've been exposed to the performance of De Niro in Raging Bull, you realize that we're beyond any very simple explanation like method or whatever of what you do. It's about immersion in the character, you know. And as Curtis will attest, you know, one of the things that we did on this movie is James Ellroy and Curtis came up with the fact that Bud White wouldn't be a beer drinker. So for 5 months, I didn't have a beer. And that, for a young Australian, was absolutely torture.
How did you decide that this character wouldn't drink beer?
Well, James had this thing going on that that Bud White's colleagues drank beer, and he didn't want to be turn out like that, them, you know. So even though he's a very basic kind of working class guy in that time period, and it would seem that beer would be his thing, he's not the kind of guy who'd spend 3 or 4 hours shooting the breeze after work, you know, just talking about rubbish like his colleagues do. So, you know, he's got another agenda. You know, after his normal shift, he's still got things he pursues in terms of being a policeman. So James came up with this thing that Bud White drinks only single malt scotch straight. And that was part of Curtis and Brian's script as well. You know, and the one time you actually do see him ask for a drink, it's when he's doing the first interrogation scene with Lynn Margaret Bracken, and he doesn't take a single sip from the glass because he only asks for the drink to relax her. That's an interrogation technique, and all the cops that see the film go, "Hey, man, he's trying to get her to relax." Okay, yeah, this guy's smarter than he might than he looks.
Why don't I actually play an excerpt of that scene? And this is the scene where Russell Crowe's character, a cop, goes to the house of a prostitute who is a Veronica Lake lookalike, played by Kim Basinger. And this is an excerpt of their first encounter together.
There's blood on your shirt. Is that an integral part of your job?
Yeah.
Do you enjoy it?
When they deserve it.
Did they deserve it today?
I'm not sure.
But you did it anyway.
Yeah. Just like the half dozen guys you screwed today.
Well, actually, it was only two. You're different, Officer White. You're the first man in 5 years who didn't tell me I looked like Veronica Lake inside of a minute.
You look better than Veronica Lake. Pierce Patchett.
He takes a cut of our earnings and invests it for us. Doesn't let us use narcotics, and he doesn't abuse us. Can your policeman's mentality grasp those contradictions?
He had you cut to look like Veronica Lake.
No. I'm really a brunette, but the rest is me. And that's all the news that's fit to print. It's nice meeting you, officer.
I'd like to see you again.
Are you asking me for a date or an appointment?
I don't know.
If you're asking me for a date, I should know your first
name. Forget I asked. It was a mistake.
Curtis Hanson, how did you cast Kim Basinger opposite Russell Crowe? Did you have them do an audition together?
No. I met Kim actually at the Formosa, which is the setting of a couple of key scenes in the movie, and described the movie that I hope to make, and more or less just told her that she was in the picture, because my feeling was that Kim would not only be able to pull off the Veronica Lake lookalike aspect, but that Kim, more than most anybody, would recognize that Veronica Lake image, the long blonde hair over the eye, that powerful image was both an asset and a trap. You know, it's all we remember, really, of Veronica Lake. And I thought that Kim would be anxious to play the woman behind that image. What I wasn't prepared for, quite frankly, was the degree to which she came forward as an actress. And again, this gets into the difference between image and reality. I didn't know Kim. I only knew her sort of by reputation. And I wasn't prepared for the degree to which she came forward as an actress and literally placed herself in my hands with an unbelievable amount of trust and courage.
It's so hard for actresses who are no longer ingenues to get a role. And I think that the fact that she is a mature woman enables her to portray the kind of cynicism that she gets across in the movie. I think it adds depth to the character.
Well, Terry, I do too, although I wouldn't actually have used the word cynicism. I think Kim Basinger's part, which is not the biggest part in the movie, but I feel it is the emotional anchor of the movie. She is the one character that knows the truth about herself and, you know, she knows that she is selling this image, that that's how she makes her living, whereas the other characters are sort of struggling with themselves. She knows the truth about herself, and she sees the truth in others. And she has arrived at this point not because she was, let us say, the brightest person that ever walked, but she has arrived there by the journey that she has gone through. And there is a spareness and a simplicity and a truth to her performance that I think comes from the fact that she brings a sort of the wisdom of years of experience as a woman, the character I'm talking about.
And so you wanted an actress mature enough to bring that to the role?
Well, I felt that she would bring that to the role. And, you know, personally, I am tired of the sort of cliche in movies of always seeing older men with much younger women. I thought, rather than working against us, doing something different would actually work for us in mm-hmm. this picture.
Curtis Hanson directed L.A. Confidential. Russell Crowe is one of the stars. It's won Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Screenplay awards from the New York Film Critics Circle and the Los Angeles Film Critics.